Good morning. It is Thursday, and that means it's time for Perspectives on WFSU. I'm Tom Flanagan, and before we get underway, a reminder, you are always welcome to be part of the conversation wherever and however that may lead, by phone, email, and also Twitter. 850-414-1234 is the phone number. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email, or you can send us a tweet at WFSU Perspective. We leave off the S. I'm still trying to figure out why. Let me give you some interesting headlines that were coming off of places like Politico this morning. This dropped at about, 5:30 this morning, and I was watching this pop up. The divisions. Their anguish was a defining image of Parkland. Now they don't talk to each other. The story of two moms who had students at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. That's by the Associated Press's Kelly Kennedy. Another headline. This is not how this is supposed to work. $5 million in school guardian money used for gun equipment, staff, and benefits. That's by Anna Ceballos with News Service of Florida. Another one, flashback, school's culture of tolerance lets students like Nicholas Cruz slide. That's out of the Sun Sentinel. Megan O'Matz and Scott Travis on that one. Coming next, arming teachers was a non-starter in Florida, but that was last year. Out of the Bradenton Herald, Tiffany Tompkins, the journalist there. And the toll in post-Parkland, Florida, young people are still dying from gun violence. The Miami Herald's Amy Driscoll and Caitlin Ostroff collaborating on that piece. That is just a small sample of the many articles just in print that are coming out relative to the Parkland tragedy that occurred 1 year ago. And as far as the local ramifications of that, we put together a panel here on WFSU that we want to introduce you to discuss what's going on here locally and kind of where we go from here as we look ahead here to possible further action by the Florida legislature and Governor Ron DeSantis's administration and all that, because this is a moving, I hate to say target, but it truly, truly is. So let's meet the folks who we brought in to say their piece on this and to give some kind of perspective to it. First, Jim Russell, former major with the Florida State University Police Department, dedicated long-distance bicyclists, mental health advocate, outstanding artist, a man of incredible and multiple talents. Jim, it's so good to have you on, sir.
I'm glad to be here, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Right next door to you, we say hi to Kate Kyle, Tallahassee-based member of the Florida chapter of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, one of the busiest ladies I know. Kate, you have been down at the Capitol. How many hours just in the past week?
Oh, goodness. Many, many hours.
And very, very busy here, too. With something else coming up tonight, we will talk about that momentarily.
Yes.
Welcome back to the microphones. John Hunke, your Chief of Security and Safety for the Leon County School District. And again, a very busy guy. Hey, John.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Got to ask you just first out of the box, John, how did your life change at the school district 1 year ago today, or in the wake of what happened a year ago?
So over the years, obviously, after these terrible shootings around the country, you'll see an enhanced focus on what we do every day, a lot of parent calls, a lot of input. I think when we look back at where we were a year ago today, I have never seen anything as intense as the last year has been with the focus on school security. Every morning I get a news feed, many of the headlines that you just read, and they're not diminishing. It's a strength that's continuing on. There's been a lot of things we've had to put into play very quickly within the last year. With not every resource available to do that, but every expectation that we do that. So it takes our school board and our superintendent and the support of our community to be able to do those things and do them in a thoughtful manner and provide realistic school security in today's climate.
And something aggravated even more by the fact that schools are not primarily intended to be a secure environment in the way that perhaps became pretty apparent we needed to do in the wake of Parkland and some of the other tragedies that have occurred.
Yes, sir. Our schools in our Leon County here, if you visit them, you'll see a varying design elements, and you can pretty much tell when they were built, starting from the 50s all the way to the 2000s. Many of them were not designed with security in mind as its number one feature. And it's a challenge to go back and retrofit those schools to today's expectations.
And to see what happens as far as the impact on the learning environment and all that kind of thing as well. And we can get into that a little bit later on. Jim Russell, boy, you have had some firsthand experience in this stuff. You were with FSU PD when the Strozier Library shooting happened, the one over here off of Ocala. All of that kind of thing. What is that like to live through as far as being a law enforcement officer?
Well, I can tell you that you never forget it. When you've experienced something like that, either primarily like our officers did when they responded to Strozier Library or in the aftermath and working with the students and the parents, it's not something that you can just compartmentalize and put into the background. It's something that, having experienced it, you live with the rest of you, for the rest of your life. It's very impactful, and it's not, you know, you get into law enforcement to help people and to, you know, and frankly, a young cop wants to get, you know, some law enforcement action and catch the bad guys. But that's not what you want to have to experience, though. So it stays with you.
Yeah, and Kay Kyle, in the wake of Parkland, of course, an awful lot of activism that we saw, thousands of students descending on the Florida Capitol last year after the shooting, and then an even larger group that came just a few weeks later, thousands of students there, and you've been involved with that. Talk about your organization, though, Moms Demand Action, Every Town for Gun Safety, those kinds of things which have been often typified as anti-gun. Is that the deal, or what are you guys really looking to do?
Yeah, we are absolutely not anti-gun, and I want to set the record straight here. So I'm happy for the opportunity to be here. Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America is a nonpartisan nationwide organization of volunteers. It was started by one American mother named Shannon Watts. So we're primarily women, primarily mothers, but that is certainly not a requirement. All are welcome to join us. We're working across the country, primarily in state capitals, to help pass common sense gun safety legislation. So we absolutely support the Second Amendment and legal responsible gun ownership. And when we're testifying and talking about these issues, that's really not what we're talking about, the legal responsible gun owners. Many of our members actually are gun owners, some even NRA members, many families, many women who have been in law enforcement and the military as well. But we know that there are policies that we can get behind that will reduce the escalating gun violence epidemic we're seeing in our country. Currently, about 100 people die every day in this country. And so there are a myriad of policies that we are supportive of. Our top legislative priority is a criminal background check on every gun sale, closing all loopholes and making sure that we keep firearms out of the hands of dangerous people.
Now, that will get us into a discussion, I'm sure, a little bit later on as to what does that mean, because whether it's Nicholas Cruz or Mr. Beerley, who was involved here with the hot yoga shooting, and that Tallahassee Police Department just came out with a lot of investigative information just the other day on what his background was, which was pretty eye-opening. But in the interim, another hot breaking headline, and we talked about this, John, out in the lobby. Governor DeSantis just last night saying that he would like the Florida Supreme Court to put together some kind of grand jury to essentially, I guess, evaluate what school districts are doing in the wake of last year's law out of the legislature that was supposed to improve school security, and part of that was a guardian program and all. Do you have a take on that, or are you going to wait for direction from the board and the superintendent, or what's going on here?
Absolutely. We would take direction from the board and the superintendent. Obviously, because of geography, the Department of Education right here in town, we have a close relationship with the Office of Safe Schools, and there's a newly created Office of Safe Schools, which does have a lot of oversight in terms of school assessments and annual reports that districts are required to keep up with. I don't have a thought on a grand jury at this point. Our teams, our student services teams, our school management teams, our school safety teams, we're working hard to make sure that we're implementing everything in our policies, everything in our training, in professional development related to threat assessment, early intervention, providing high quality trained law enforcement officers in all of our schools here in the county. You mentioned the Guardian program. The way that the law was written required boards and sheriffs to agree to implement Guardian programs. So early on in our community here, both Sheriff Walt McNeil as well as our school board did not have an interest in the Guardian program. So we haven't spent a lot of time on it quite actually. So we currently are proud to say that we have a law enforcement officer in every one of our Leon County schools, as well as every one of our local charter schools. All four are meeting the mandate for an armed professional individual on their campus.
However, should the dictum come down from the legislature or from the governor's office that, well, you know, we set aside money to get guns in the hands of teachers, philosophically, Leon County is opposed to that, right?
We are. Every conversation that I have or that I can recall amongst our school board members, our superintendent, parents, there are obvious people that have a differing opinion, and we can agree to disagree on that. I think there may also be places that are not like ours that could be a fit, and that's a conversation for them. Hopefully that will not be a conversation for us here in Leon County.
All right. We are talking about school safety in the wake of the Parkland tragedy 1 year ago today here on Perspectives. John Hunkier, the head of security for the Leon County School District. Jim Russell, who was kind of second in command at the FSU Police Department. And Kate Kyle from Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. And we'd love to add your voice to the conversation as well. 850-414-1234 right here on this very special edition of Perspectives. We'll be right back. We are back on Perspectives. This came out this morning, a statement from our president at Florida State University, John Thrasher. 1 year ago today, a senseless act of gun violence occurred at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland. Many in our Florida State family were and still are affected by this horrific event. We have hundreds of alumni and 240 current students who graduated from Stoneman Douglas, 47 of whom are first-year students and may have witnessed the shooting. We also have admitted 178 new Stoneman Douglas students for the 2019-2020 school year, and we join them in remembering the 17 precious lives lost and the families who were devastated by this unspeakable tragedy. And President Thrasher goes on, sadly, since the Parkland massacre, FSU has experienced the tragic loss of a student and a faculty member in a shooting at a yoga studio here in Tallahassee. We know some students are still grieving as a result of both of these events, and we encourage them to seek support. And he gives the university counseling line on there. In the meantime, I would like to assure you that my stance against guns on campus has not changed, and in fact, recent events have only reaffirmed my position. College campuses should be safe from violence, and your safety will remain my number one priority. Again, a statement from FSU President John Thrasher. And Jim Russell, since you were at FSU PD when the shooting took place at the fraternity house off of Ocala, right there, that seemed to, and we talked about this earlier, changed President Thrasher's viewpoint, at least somewhat, towards having guns on campus. I know that's a recurrent theme we see in the legislature all the time. But as a former police officer on campus, Does that make your lives easier by not having a lot of civilian firepower out in the general population?
I think for campus, the general attitude amongst our officers when I was there was that it would complicate things if there were a lot of people on campus that were carrying weapons. You know, of course, after Columbine, we began something called critical incident deployment, and that was where what officers would do was different. It wasn't secure and wait for SWAT; it was go in, and we're trained to go to where the shooting is, and we're trained to find the person with the gun, and we're trained to stop the person with the gun. Now you can, and so we look ahead into what would happen if there was a shooting on campus, an active shooter type of situation. And we went into that and didn't know who the good guy was and who the bad guy was, because I can tell you that shooting situations are very chaotic. And so if you as a cop are going to a situation and you know that the likelihood of the person with the gun is going to be the bad guy, it helps you focus more on what you need to be attending to rather than, is this a good guy? Is it a bad guy? Am I going to hurt a good guy? Is a good guy going to hurt another good guy? So that's the general attitude amongst, and everybody has their own opinion, of course, but it you know, I think the word is it complicates and it makes it more difficult to respond to. Now at FSU, of course, we've had an abundance of training, but also geographically, that's a small campus. So we have the benefit of being able to get to where we need to get to very quickly. Like when the Strozier shooting happened, from us being notified of it until when the shooter was down, it was about 90 seconds, which was – when people reviewed that, they call that the gold standard of a response. So we have some benefits as far as how FSU can approach things as well. But I think it's definitely a consideration when people think about it and discuss and debate this thing. What is the – perspective going to be from the responding police, who may or may not be from that jurisdiction even.
Yeah, and it also gets into the differential in training between a law enforcement officer and the average civilian who has a concealed carry permit.
I can tell you as well, when we started doing this training, the critical incident response rapid deployment training after Columbine, we would do scenarios with the officers. We use something called simunitions, which basically is a firearm that shoots a soap pellet instead of a bullet, and it hurts a lot, so it gives you incentive not to get hit by it, of course. But we would put them through scenarios, and we would throw them curveballs in those scenarios. One of the scenarios that we did, and still do similar things, was it was a situation where you go into a classroom, the shooter is down in the scenario, played by, you know, a trainer. And in that scenario, there's an officer, a police officer, who has taken the person out, and they've got a badge in one hand and they've got a gun in the other hand, and they're holding the person, and they're holding the badge up to the people bursting in the room saying, "I'm a cop, I'm a cop, I'm a cop." And when you add adrenaline, and this is a training environment, you add adrenaline into it and chaos and movement and all that stuff. We had scenarios in which people being exposed to this training in a law enforcement environment shot the person that was playing the cop, sometimes more than once. Now we would go back and train them and make sure that we get, you know, we say we make our mistakes in training rather than real life. That's the goal. But we train for these types of scenarios and make mistakes in these types of scenarios, and we train for restraint, we train for weapon retention, we train for all kinds of other things, and we make mistakes in that training. And there's mistakes that can be made in real life, as we've seen around the country as well, right? So somebody who has had the minimum of training and maybe don't even train themselves or go to a reputable range or something like that, what's the expectation then? You know, and I think the expectation would be a somewhat less effective response.
Okay, because it's not just marksmanship. It is also threat assessment and how to tamp down that adrenaline surge and situational awareness and all those kinds of things you're talking about.
And abject fear.
Yeah, in the midst of that. Kay Kyle, you talked about what moms demand action as far as what you're saying, reasonable responses here. What are some of the, I guess your and that's a terrible thing, bullet points, but what are some of the major points here that you're talking about when you go and speak with lawmakers and other policy people?
Great. So criminal background checks, as I mentioned, is our number one policy objective, to close all loopholes. You know, technology has changed, and internet online sales are very difficult when you don't have to go through any kind of federal background check. There are lots of ways around for people who are determined to get their hands on guns illegally. It's not so hard to do in this country. We were very encouraged by the legislation that passed last year in the aftermath of the Parkland shooting, and particularly to see the red flag law that, or the extreme risk protection order that passed. And those are laws that we're seeing across the country have great effect and success in identifying individuals who generally exhibit their behavior and let people know. The indications go out. They'll make comments. They'll post things on social media, sort of indicating that they intend to harm themselves or someone else. And in these cases, a red flag law will give law enforcement, and we are actually advocating to expand that a little bit to allow families to petition the courts to have a judge hear a case when an individual is displaying this dangerous behavior. So taking guns out temporarily, assessing the situation, when someone knows something and says something, we need to respond quickly and immediately. So we think red flag laws are a great way. We also really do a lot of educational work about safe storage. We know that a lot of cases of school shootings happen. The guns, the firearms are from students. A lot of times they're students, current or former. They get those guns in their own homes. So we have a program called Be Smart. We go out into communities. And again, it's not a political agenda. It is not a judgment. It's simply, if you maintain a firearm in your home, it's critical that you keep it stored safely and responsibly, unloaded, locked, away from where a toddler, a child, a teenager who may be struggling with mental health issues or depression or anxiety, keeping those guns locked and out of the hands of children is critical. So we definitely think more education is appropriate. Safe storage laws are passed in, I think, about 19 states now. So these are some of the strategies that won't infringe on anybody's rights, but will help protect all of us.
Yeah, and John Hunkier, we see this because we get the notifications, whether from law enforcement or the district office, where a kid will bring a gun to school. It happens. You guys got to deal with it all the time.
It does happen. You know, and we were speaking in the lobby about how we usually are made aware of that, okay? And that's usually because somebody tells. Our number one security feature in the district is people. You know, the see something, say something slogans that you've seen are very effective. We've established a 24-hour number for parents, for the community, for our school communities to call and provide us information. And that's quite often how we receive information that time to time someone does bring a weapon or a gun to a school. But that is a reality in American schools, and we just have to be prepared for it.
Yeah, and how do you deal with that then? Does the kid immediately get kicked out for a year or expelled permanently, or is it situationally dependent? What happens?
So that's obviously one of the most severe infractions in our code of conduct. Obviously, it'll have implications in the criminal justice system as well as the education system. There is an expulsion process in our district. No student is expelled to the street unless they're incarcerated. So yes, there are second chance schools, opportunity schools. They often may have the ability to work their way back to a traditional school, but there's many factors in each individual case, whether there are threats involved. Obviously, if it's an actual firearm, simulated firearm, BB gun, those types of things. But we take them very seriously. And just this year, we've instituted a very, very thorough threat assessment procedure. We require teams in each of our schools to review these instances. may not just be the weapon itself. It may be the information as to why that student brought a weapon to school. There may be many factors. It can be complex, but as we move forward and get stronger and stronger, working with many partners, we can handle these situations appropriately and prevent them from happening again.
Well, that gets us back into the situation, Jim Russell, since you were such a strong mental health advocate and you've been very upfront about that. Kate mentioned red flags.
Mm-hmm.
How do we do that assessment without violating everything from HIPAA to privacy concerns to all that to someone who is troubled, who is struggling, who may act out in a violent fashion? How do we figure out who the heck those folks are and how do we keep them away from firearms?
Well, it's a great question. One of the reasons why I became a mental health advocate is because very publicly I've struggled with mental health issues myself. I'm a very outspoken advocate about that. Went through my entire law enforcement career having clinical depression and later generalized anxiety disorder and panic disorder. But my example, though, is that those can be treated and you can feel better and you can live a normal life. But also, I've worked very closely with the FSU Department of Psychology and I've done talks and that sort of thing. And when somebody is ideating about suicide or harm or self-harm, one of the most important things is what they call removing lethal means. So if you had a family member in your house that was saying that they wanted to hurt themselves or they were suicidal, you would smartly remove lethal means from their ability to get to them. You'd lock the guns up, give them to a neighbor. And this is basically a reflection of that. For me, I'm comfortable with it. Even being somebody that's been diagnosed with mental illness, I'm comfortable with that as long as there's and I think it's already in there, as long as there's the acknowledgement that you can get better. You know, your depression can be in remission. You can be treated, you know, and there are means to get your firearms back if you're doing okay. And so I'm definitely a supporter of removing lethal means from somebody who could harm themselves or harm others on the most basic level.
I'm great. But Kate, how do we go through again that evaluation process? Because there are kids who are chronically depressed or suicidal or any of these other things, or may just every now and then seem to lash out and have some problems with anger management. Does that then create a stigma that here is a person who we never, ever, ever want to have exercise their Second Amendment rights, let's say?
Well, you know, I'm not a mental health clinician, so I wouldn't be able to speak to, you know, how that's diagnosed. But I think what's important to remember about the red flag law is that there is due process. And so a judge would be hearing these facts. There would be experts that would be consulted. It would not be just a very quick, knee-jerk, rash reaction to just take guns away from people. Certainly, we want to keep those safeguards and make sure that the law is used properly. One of the components of the Be Smart program I mentioned before was recognizing, and I think we can all do better raising our own awareness about what the signs are for kids who are struggling. And I think a lot of kids, you know, I have a teenager in my house, I have a college-age student, and I have a middle schooler. I think a lot of kids are really struggling right now with just the fast pace of their world, the expectations, the social media pressures, the lockdown drills that they're having a lot in their schools. There's just a lot going on. So the more we can be aware, we can talk about these things without stigma. I think it's great that you talk about that so much, Jim. Leaving it to the courts, and a lot of times these removals are temporary, right? So there is a way for people to find their way back.
And so this isn't just someone who, they had a little depression, they're perhaps on medication, and they'll never be able to have a gun.
No, certainly not.
Okay. All right. And John Hunkier, as far as kids are concerned, you talk not only with folks at the district level, but also principals and teachers and all that. Has that changed the equation of education, where something we probably never had to deal with when we were in school, which is in the back of your mind, I may not get home tonight?
It is. I think there's in the Tallahassee Democrat today, there's a quote from Superintendent Hannah, that parents expect and demand that when they send their children to us that they're going to return home safely. That is in the back of their minds. It's an obvious when you look at what's in the news and in your social media every day, day like today, where they're reviewing the tragic incidents of a year ago, and on the mental health front, a lot of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Act focused on law enforcement officers and guardians and hardening schools, but there was also really heavily focused on the mental health, on early intervention. Currently in our district, as we speak, every employee is going to go through mental health first aid training. Every child will be screened by their teachers to look for signs. And there are teams of people, clinicians, also law enforcement, that can provide the parents with resources if there are behaviors that could later lead to, a situation that would require, more things,
Yeah, not just teachers now, but also clinicians and first responders. And oh, my gosh, the imperatives that are being leveled into our educational system now are almost daunting. We'd love to add you to the conversation if you have a thought on this anniversary of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas situation, but also what is going on as we move forward into the larger discussion of school safety and the well-being of our kids and all of that. 850-414-1234 is the number for Perspectives on WFSU. You can also zip us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. John Hunkier, Kate Kyle, and Jim Russell here with us. We'll be right back. Perspectives, as we continue our conversation with Jim Russell, used to be with the FSU PD, and just one heck of an artist. Where is your next show going to be, Mr. Russell?
My next show is going to be on February 24th as part of a fundraiser with the Women's Club off of Los Robles here in town. And I'll be having some of my artwork there. And then on March 3rd, I'll be having a display of my artwork at the Jewish Food and Cultural Festival at Temple Israel. So two chances coming up to see my stuff in person. I'd love you to come by and see me.
Yeah, terrific, terrific stuff. Not just landscapes and that sort of thing, too, but I love your military aircraft thing, too. That's going to be a really nice F-14 for any of you guys who used to be back in the Navy and you would watch those things come and go on carriers. That's scary when one of those comes
in. Got
a couple
F-14s for you.
There you go. It can't end. And Kay Kyle, you have something coming up this evening, I believe, at the Capitol, right?
Yes. We're going to have a community remembrance for the families and victims of the Parkland shooting tonight at 6 p.m. I invite everyone to come join us. We'll be in the Capitol courtyard. Superintendent Hannah will speak. Mayor John Daly will be there. Representative Loran Osley. We'll have some faith leaders. Rabbi Romberg will be with us. Pastor Brant Copeland from First Presbyterian, along with Reverend Kathy Walker of St. John's Episcopal. And Candace McKibben from Big Ben Hospice will talk a bit with us about grief and trauma.
Your priorities now coming up in the legislative session, which is rapidly bearing down on us here. Do you have that mapped out? Exactly what do you want to tell lawmakers and the new administration of Governor DeSantis here? That, in, just in case you weren't here last year, folks, here's what we would like to see.
Yes, absolutely. We have been speaking out already. We were in attendance in full force at the Senate Education Committee meeting that just happened this week. We were very disappointed to see that committee advance this idea of expanding the Guardian program to include classroom teachers. So we have members all across the state of Florida who I am certain are on the phone sending emails and letters and letting their lawmakers know exactly what they think about that. We will continue to testify in opposition of that policy to advance this idea of arming teachers without any data or evidence to suggest it would be safe or successful. And again, the criminal background checks, just expanding that, strengthening the red flag laws, those are our top objectives. And they will see us in committee.
Mm-hmm. But regardless of what comes down, if it is a matter of state law, John Hunke, are you and the district leadership have to implement that? You really don't have a choice, do you?
Well, you know, we were working before they finalized the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Act related to what we believe was going to come out of it. So I'm sure, we will be monitoring closely everything that happens. Quick answer is, if it's law, yes, sir, we will.
Yeah, there's not too much choice. And as former law enforcement officer, I mean, that's the way it goes, Jim. It is not optional. You have to implement these things, whether or not politically or philosophically, you're in sync with them, right?
That's right. You know, as a law enforcement officer, we don't lean toward one side or the other of the political spectrum. We carry out and enforce the law as it's made by the legislators, and that's really the bottom line.
Is this going to change, do you think, long term, though? Even the design of schools. I'm looking at a place, John, like, you know, the old Leon, where you had – how many entrances and exits do you have at Leon High School?
They're endless. That school clearly is one of our largest challenges. We've met with the administration, their safety team, as early as last week. It will absolutely change school design. So the requirements to be able to secure a facility quickly – that requires electricity to every doorway for access control. I always say you have to take the bite of the apple when it presents itself. So anytime we have new construction, that's where we go in and we retrofit schools to bring them up to the highest standard of security that we have.
And without divulging, because you sure don't want to give a potential bad person information that could lead them to complete their nefarious mission, but you have had to install everything from additional security cameras to other kinds of sensor devices, all that sort of stuff, in the existing schools that we have here in Leon County, and probably a lot more is yet to be done.
Yes, sir. We are continuously enhancing the security features in all of our schools. In 2009, we opened a district security center. We have a security center that's dedicated nothing but school safety. We monitor all of our alarms. We monitor all of our cameras 24 hours a day. That's where the system resides to pump out information in an emergency situation. We monitor the weather. That's a critical area. And then every day we have hundreds of buses that are, cruising around on the streets, dropping off kids to and from school. So that's a lot to keep a handle on. To your point about divulging security information, it's protected in statute in the Sunshine Law. Anything that's a security system or a plan is not a public record. So we don't readily release school plans or locations of cameras. But we do, parents do want to know what things are in place. And we are happy to talk to parents about the systems that we have in place and the features to make their kids feel safe and be safe at school.
Did that happen at FSU as well, Jim, when after the Strozier shooting, all these other things, a constant security enhancement of the campus? Did that happen?
I was asked that question a lot, especially after that happened. And FSU is constantly looking at its security upgrades. Well before the shooting at Strozier happened, when I first was working at FSU, we probably had maybe 10 cameras on campus at areas in which they had money exchanges, like in stores and that sort of thing. By the time I left, we were approaching 300 cameras, and there was close to that amount before the shooting in 2014. So FSU has always been very proactive in enhancing security on campus, and really because we've known as a university that universities are potential targets for active shooters. They're potential targets for we have this huge stadium. They're targets for terrorism, and So they've always been, as long as I've been there, moving in the direction of enhancing and assessing and building upon security on the campus. So in a way, it was continuing what we did with a continued amount of urgency.
But do we get to a point where maybe it's the horses out of the barn scenario, meaning back in the days of the shoe bomber, all kinds of controls and preventatives were put in place in our aviation system to make sure that didn't happen again. Mm-hmm. No one has tried to get a shoe bomb through, at least as far as we know.
Right.
TSA isn't sending out a, you know, regular report on this stuff, but that doesn't seem to be a thing anymore. Do we get to a point of security in our schools, our university campuses, all that, and then that becomes a non-target?
You know, one of the things that I always remember when we're talking about something like an active shooter, and I used to teach active shooter response for the people on campus, is we have to remember and understand that we're talking about the absolute worst case scenario that can happen. Somebody who shows up with the idea they're going to kill as many people as possible before the cops show up or something happens, they're going to kill as many people as possible, and they go in knowing they're probably going to die. So to create a security plan against something like that is extremely daunting. It really is. We have a big challenge ahead of us to continue doing that. So, when is too much? I don't know. Is it ever going to be enough? I don't know. We just are dealing with something that is a very, very difficult scenario, really.
A federal agent of my acquaintance who was very, very knowledgeable about threat assessments and terrorism response and all that said, if the shooter is willing to die, it is virtually impossible to protect your population against that person.
Something bad's going to happen. If that's what they intend to do, something bad's going to happen. And a lot of what we have done in target hardening isn't necessarily going to stop something bad from happening somewhere. It's to displace it to somewhere else. That's the reason why we tell people in an active shooter situation to turn off the lights and lock the doors and get small and get quiet, because we want the person to move on to somewhere else. And it's a horrible situation. It's a horrible scenario. But like you said, if somebody is willing to, and maybe even looking forward to die in carrying out the evil that they're doing, it's hard. It really is hard to deal with.
So, Kate Kyle, when you go and talk to lawmakers and stuff, do you think they understand that Jim just talked about?
Well, I would certainly hope so. I would certainly hope that our lawmakers will continue to listen to law enforcement, university presidents, campus police, teachers, superintendents, everyone I hear speaking out against the idea that more guns will make us safer. If that were true, we would be the safest country on earth. But instead, in the United States, you're 25 times more likely to be murdered than in any other developed nation. So the notion that more guns will create safety is simply false logic. So I hope that they will listen to their constituents and the experts and the stakeholders in these environments as they pass laws that will affect all of us.
Because they're not going to give you more money, are they, John?
I don't think so. I think if you look at... I sat on a round table immediately after Stoneman Douglas and the governor, and there were folks from Stoneman Douglas and parents and lawmakers. And what was in policy prior to that, it required districts to have procedures for fire drills and bomb threats. Okay, the words active shooter, that term, if you think about it, maybe 5 or 6, 7 years. I remember after 9/11, at the time I was working in the Miami-Dade School District, where we had 400 schools. It was pure terrorism, target hardening, the active shooter response, the active shooter training was non-existent for the most part. And now that is trumped all. And it's a shame. It's very sad. That is what we have to communicate to our kids. That's what we have to communicate to our parents. Everything Jim said is very accurate. I mean, we are looking to secure a facility as quickly as possible, get a lot of law enforcement response, and mitigate to the degree we can, and hope and pray that it never happens at our schools.
I know a lady I know, she mentioned this to me the other day, that she feels like now, and she's got a third grader, and she gets her up in the morning, says, you know, to get her all set, and she is so tempted to say, okay, honey, time to go to jail. Because it has changed that dramatically from what this mom remembers going to school, when it was much more freewheeling and open and people coming and going and that. And it's, of necessity, it has to be different now. But it,
we put a lot of effort to not, obviously, not have that appearance to our schools. And our superintendent is not a fence proponent to a degree, but he understands. But it's, you know, everything we do has to be very thoughtful, and we have to still make schools inviting places. They are community places. We will do what's necessary, but, you know, that feedback from parents does not go on deaf ears. We do not want our schools looking like institutions, correctional institutions.
Yeah, as safe as they may be. Although I understand people do get hurt in jail and prison, too.
Yeah, you know, as John was talking there, one of the things that came to my mind as far as how times are changing, when I was at FSU, I used to do the parent orientation for incoming parents, and we would talk about the police department and what we did. And one of the first or second slides in there, we went right into talking about active shooter response and what we do to train and the history of that. When I would do that a dozen years ago, and I would start talking about that with parents, the looks on their faces were shocked, mouths hanging open. I would get emails, you know, what kind of war zone is my child going to? They were taken aback by confronting that issue. If you went back to a year ago when I did my last orientation, there's no response at all. There's no discernible emotional response when I'm talking about responding to an active shooter on a campus. People have really absorbed it as just part of just something that exists now.
The new normal.
The new normal.
Yeah. But I would point out that it's a pretty uniquely American problem. Other developed nations do not have this issue the way we do.
And will we ever meet in the middle, do you think, given the degree of polarization that we have on this? And I was hoping that someone would call up and maybe, you know, take a different viewpoint than what we're saying, although I think we got a good diversity of outlook right here that, you know, no, and everyone should have a gun unless they do something really horrible and egregious, and then we'll take it away from them. But otherwise, everyone should have one. And I know some folks who think that way.
I think one of the things that is important to acknowledge with this is it's not an easy fix. It's a very, very complicated situation. You know, my background, when I went to FSU, I started in art, but I finished in criminology, which is a lot of sociology and looking at deviance and that sort of thing. And this is really a very deep sociological issue as well. There are things going on in the last 50 years as far as information sharing, technology, where we stand as individuals, where we stand in a community as individuals, that are having an effect on our American psyche and also having an effect on individuals psychologically as well. Was this happening prior to, you know, we have to look at these. I don't have the answers to all this. Was this happening prior to the internet? Was this happening prior to television and that sort of thing, in which people are, you know, the Instagram world, how many likes do I have is going to make me have a certain amount of self-esteem. When I was growing up, it was – how many bicycles are in your front yard from playing with your friends? It wasn't how many likes on Instagram. And people are basing their self-worth on all these artificial social engines. And, you know, when somebody is rejected through that or rejected in person in society and stuff, the people have different reactions. Sometimes they turn inward and sometimes they turn outward. And I think there needs to be – all these things that we're talking about are extremely valid as part of this. But there's one big piece is we need to dig down and see why is this happening in the first place. A lot of what we talk about is response to, you know, the security is responding to somebody showing up there or responding to somebody who's already a broken person. You know, how do we get ahead of this to where people aren't leaning toward the propensity of wanting to hurt other people in mass like that? And that's a huge task that we really need to be looking at as an American society, because we're broken. And we got to find out why we got broke.
And how do we start caring for each other again?
Let's remember that it's Valentine's Day. So this is a day for love. And I think that I love hearing you say that, Jim. The Village Square is having a conversation tomorrow at noon at the Good Samaritan Methodist Church about this concept called anomie. It's the breakdown of the moral values in a society. So I think that'd be a great way to continue this conversation.
I think it is more productive than hearts and flowers, although I must say that you guys brought some of that here today in a very civil and polite and informed conversation, and we covered a lot of ground in a very short period of time. John Hunke, your Chief of Security and Safety, Leon County School District, Kay Kyle, with Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, and Jim Russell, our former FSU major, now artist extraordinaire. So good to have you guys on Perspectives
today.
Thanks
for having us.
Thank you so much.
And happy Valentine's Day, guys. Perspectives produced by WFSU in Tallahassee. Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls back behind the glass working so hard today. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week, we'll spend the whole hour with the mayor of Tallahassee, John Daly. He'll join us then. We hope you will, too, right here on Perspectives.
Copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.